Hey, everybody, it's Jason Calacanis. This is a new podcast I'm hosting called Inside Transportation. I'm hosting it with Johan Marino. He is a writer at Inside.com, and he does the Inside Transportation and Inside EV newsletters. Johan is with me. Johan, tell everybody where they can sign up for the newsletters that we base this podcast off of.
Yeah, so it's inside.com/transportation. If you're more into electric vehicles, we have an electric vehicle newsletter, and that's inside.com/EVs.
And you can subscribe to this on Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, any of the great podcast players out there. And now on with the show.
Before we begin the show, I just want to let you all know that this podcast was brought to you in partnership with Ford Motor Company and the law firm of Fenwick & West.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 0 of Inside Transportation. This is a podcast that we're launched at Inside.com. Inside.com is a newsletter company where we provide business-to-business newsletters to people who are passionate about the topic, typically who work in the topic. And one of our breakout newsletters is Inside Transportation, and it's written by Johan Marino, and he is here with me today for episode 0. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Jason, how's it going?
It's going well. Now, you've been writing with Inside for how long now?
It's been 3 years, going on 4. And my beat has always been electric vehicles, transportation, ride hailing. For a lot of our loyal readers of the Inside Electric Vehicles newsletter, for example, or Inside Transportation, they kind of know that it's evolved over the years, to kind of include this new generation of mobility, right? I mean, you can see that over the past 2 years, we've seen a shift, right, in transportation, just like we've seen it in the past 5 years, just like we've seen it in the past decade. And we're only going to see more things change between now and the future. So, yes.
And we broaden that aperture because we have VTOLs coming out, vertical takeoff and landing cabs, basically, that'll be flying us around. We have automated cars, we have buses, and we have ride sharing. There's so many different transportation options that we wanted to just open that aperture. So let's go through the top stories from the newsletter. If you want to sign up for the newsletter, it's inside.com/transportation or inside.com/EV for electric vehicles, correct?
Yeah, so that's our electric vehicles newsletter. And right now, both newsletters come out 3 days a week. So free for all subscribers currently. So go ahead, subscribe, and it's going to be the most important newsletter you read all day. I'm going to say that.
For sure, if you're in the industry. And you have a lot of people on the newsletter from the major transportation companies. Maybe you could just tell us folks you've heard from, not specific people, but just the type of companies that subscribe to the newsletters, the two of them.
Yes. Tesla, GM, it's funny because from time to time I'll go to different auto industry conferences and I'll see the name of people that attended the conference. And a lot of those people are the same people who read the newsletter. So a lot of OEMs, a lot of automakers, transportation companies, Uber, Amazon, just so anyone who's, involved in the industry, who, works at an OEM, we have a lot of those readers too.
All right.
So it's a
great crowd.
So let's
get started. What's on the docket for this week?
So, obviously we're recording this in the midst of a pandemic and, COVID-19 has been a tragedy for all of us and it's changed the way of life for us here in the U.S. Many employees can only work remotely if they haven't been laid off or fired. All events and social gatherings have been canceled and schools have been closed, which has actually resulted in a reduction of gridlock across major metro areas in the U.S. Traffic is down exponentially around the U.S. For instance, this came from a New York Times article, and we'll share the link in the show notes. But this past week on March 18th at 8 a.m., traffic was moving 53% faster in Los Angeles than it did on the same day in 2019.
So it went from 8 miles per hour to 16.
Yes.
Having been on those roads.
Yes. Los Angeles resident here, it's never been good. 405 traffic has never been good. Yeah. And then this, at the same time, we see that, this data from the European Space Agency found that atmospheric levels of nitrogen dioxide went down year over year between March 2019 and March 2020 in LA. So it's kind of interesting because, you know, we always, you know, have these proposals to reduce traffic, right? In 2006, you know, LA actually, they expanded the 405 freeway, the Sepulveda Pass. They spent $1.6 billion expanding it to add one more lane in each direction. And it took about 6 years, overran so many costs, and traffic is still bad on the 405, right? So it's kind of interesting because it's like, is this global pandemic going to show us shifts on how we work? You know, are city officials going to say, hey, you know, X amount of companies, if you want like a tax incentive, or if you want, you know, some sort of incentive for making your employees work from home versus having them come into the office every day. And, you know, their reasoning is like, hey, we saw all these changes in the atmosphere. We saw traffic go down with employees working from home. I mean, is that going to be the future of work?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting observation because putting aside induced traffic, I think that's what they call it, or induced utilization, where the amount of capacity then drives people to use it until the capacity is all gone. So when they added that lane, and I lived right off of the Sunset Boulevard exit when they redid that bridge as well, and I lived in Brentwood at the time, we all thought, wow, this is going to be a big game changer. And it was a modest game changer. You got more people could get off the exit ramps. That seemed to be a big part of this process too, was how many cars could they pocket into the exit and on ramps to get them off of Sunset Boulevard, to get them off of Santa Monica Boulevard or Wilshire Boulevard, to keep that traffic flowing. So it was both about getting the traffic up and down the 405, that's the north-south freeway in Los Angeles, as well as those avenues that go across the boulevards to get those cars off those boulevards so that traffic would flow on the streets when it goes underneath in the underpasses and the overpasses going over the 405. But to your bigger point, Johan, it really is interesting when you think about how many companies were not work from home, had never experimented with it, and now are being forced to experiment with it, correct? Right. Now they're told you can't come to work. And so people who had never worked from home, for example, my company Launch, which is an investment company, aside from Insight has always been work from home. Nobody comes to the office except for Luke and I. And then on the other side of the business, my investment company, everybody's in person because we do need to meet with founders. And we're getting a quick lesson in how do we do podcasts like This Week in Startups, or how do we do investing and interview companies for our accelerator and for investment in person. Now, some of those will result in us saying, you know what? Doing it virtually doesn't work. Like, we're not going to run a virtual accelerator. We want, when we do our startup accelerator, the companies to be there in person. But other things, we're like, you know what? Zencastr, which is a podcasting tool that's really cool, works rock solid now. When I used it 2 or 3 years ago, it was, you know, okay, but not rock solid. Now it's rock solid. I've done 4 or 5 podcasts in the last 2 weeks on Zencastr, and I love it. And I set up a home studio. So it feels like it's a forcing function, and that forcing function will make people and companies say, is my commute worth it? So if somebody is coming from the Valley to Santa Monica, that's going to call it what, a 75-minute commute to go those 20 miles? And that's 75 minutes each way, 150 minutes a day. You're working 20 days a month. You start doing the math on this, you're talking about 3,000 minutes. It's 50 hours of commuting. And would you not want to recapture that time?
Right.
And either give it back to the employee or split it with the employer. Even if you split it with the employer and the employer got half an hour more time and the employee got half of it, I think that's what people are going to start to realize. And that could be a sea change. Now, I don't think it's going to make the empty highways permanent, but you could see 5, 10, 20% of companies embrace some amount of work from home.
Yeah. And, you know, employees who maybe asked for work from home privileges previously can now say, hey, but, you know, I worked from home half this year. But the other point, you know, I kind of wanted to make,
let's hope it's not half this year. Let's hope it's four weeks.
Right.
I mean, that's the other big question, is how long is this going to last? Because that will have the big impact, I think, is this a 2 to 4 week or a 2 to 4 month? And it could have radically different outcomes.
Right. No, I agree with you. I also feel like maybe people be getting a little stir crazy working at home. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's definitely a change. And I don't know, it might shift how automakers sell their cars. It might shift how public transit systems kind of outline their schedules. Kind of going into the next topic here. So public transit has also kind of faced an impact. They've been severely impacted by the coronavirus. And one version of the government stimulus package that they're putting together right now in Congress includes $500 million for Amtrak, $50 billion for airlines, but no assistance for public transit systems. Now, you know, we're looking at some of the numbers here for New York's MTA system, so their public transit system. And on Monday of last week, ridership was down about 60% on the subways and 49% on the buses versus the same Monday last year.
So in New York City, that basically means you're still not getting a seat on either the bus or the subway.
Probably not.
I don't know what happened since I left New York 20 years ago, almost now, 18 years ago. The subway has collapsed in New York. It's gone totally downhill. And de Blasio has to understand, like, the number one job of the mayor is making sure that the subway runs as well as possible. I mean, this is a quick way to not get yourself elected. But, you know, to your point, yes, I think the nature of car ownership and how we commute is up for grabs. So anytime there's some giant change like this, people are going to look at it and say, what changes? And 9/11 was a little instructive. You know, people thought, oh my God, airlines going to change forever. All transportation. The only thing that really sustainably changed forever was airlines, right? We added the TSA.
Right.
And that added a level of expense to flying that we didn't previously have. In fact, the TSA, I think, was created explicitly after 9/11, right? So correct me if I'm wrong there, but I think that was created because of 9/11 or greatly expanded. And so that did change radically. I don't think subways are going to change radically, except maybe people don't want to be as close to each other. And that could be the density of subways and people wearing masks on them. When you go to Japan, I remember the first time I went to Japan, I saw 10 people when I got on the subway wearing surgical masks. And I said, what's going on in here? Why are they wearing masks? You know, are they afraid of pollution or something? They said, no, they're sick. And I said, oh, they're afraid of getting sick. And they said, no, they are sick. They're wearing those masks to not get other people sick. And that, I think, will be the big sea change in America, is this idea that we're going to try to protect the rest of the herd if we are in fact sick and we have to go on transportation. To your earlier point about what may change about car ownership, what percentage of the time are cars not in use? If I own a car on average, Johan, what percentage of time is it not in use?
I believe the figure, and you know, I might have to double check this figure, but it's about 70%.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard as high as 90 from people. Like back in the Uber days, people would say 94% of the time a car is not in use. So, you know, these statistics are hard to get because a cab might be in use 90% of the time and your second car might be in use 1% of the time. But think about this. If people stay home 2 or 3 days a week and work from home, then that car doesn't get used for those 2 or 3 days. This could push more people into what we called in the early days of Uber, full disclosure, I was the third investor in Uber. If you haven't read my bio or my book, Angel, maybe the second or third year of Uber in San Francisco, we started to hear from people they were going to go full Uber. And what that meant was they were going to get rid of their car because their car cost them $2,000 or $3,000 a month if they had a nice car. And they could ride in the back of a nice car for $2,000 or $3,000 a month. So why not recapture that time to be able to read or do email or SMS messaging? So I think that's a big question about what's going to change after this. I hope the crowdedness and sick people getting on the subway is one of those things that changes. And when somebody coughs on the subway, it would be amazing if somebody pulled out of their bag, you know, a surgical mask and offered it to the person and said, hey, do you need a mask? That's what has to happen here. I believe that we could go back to work right now, even with the coronavirus, if people were tested, their temperature was tested, they had a coronavirus test, and they wore masks. if they were feeling ill or whatever. Or even if they said right now, you could have your company go back to work next week if everybody agreed to wear masks at work, it'd be like, okay, that's something worth considering. Let's make the, I think a lot of employees would say, if my job's at risk or some number of jobs of this company are at risk, damn straight we'll wear the masks.
Well, one question I have for you, and, you know, kind of going off of this point about Uber, you know, obviously ride hailing, you're right next to the driver. If you're in a carpool situation, which Uber and Lyft have, you know, launched over the past few years, you're literally right next to a stranger. Do you think that ride hailing and maybe even some car sharing companies like Getaround will face, you know, the wrath of the coronavirus, right? Where people that's won't want to get into like a Uber or a Lyft.
I think that's an interesting insight. One thing I know about human nature is that we're very quick to rebound and adapt. And so, you know, after 9/11, again, the big crisis that I think most of the people listening to this will have experienced. Some of you might only know it through your parents' stories about it, or you might have been very young when it happened. It did change the way people looked at air travel for a year or two, and then it didn't at all. There's nobody going to the airport who's really thinking about what are the chances this plane gets hijacked. And after 9/11, people would get on the plane and they would look at everybody suspiciously, and they would go up and down the aisle and look and see if there's anybody on this plane who I think might hijack it. And that was like a talked about phenomenon. Like I scoped out the plane. I made sure if there was somebody on the plane who I thought might hijack it, I could intercept them as they ran to the cockpit to take over the plane. I mean, this is really dark, but it was something people were talking about and thinking about. And then now nobody thinks about it. So I think, Uber Pool and Lyft Line, those multi-passenger services, and the subway, which also has much more density. One would argue Uber Pool is much less dense than being on any of the subways or the BART system here in San Francisco. So arguably, unequivocally, less dangerous. Also, people just are going to need to wipe things down. So if you're renting a car, you're going to want to wipe everything down, right? So this general cleanliness is something that was lost on society. I have OCD about it. I'm washing my hands constantly. And even before the coronavirus, I was always using a tissue. I carry tissues with me, and I would never touch a door handle because I know that they're petri dishes and I would never shake people's hands. I came up with my own system to avoid shaking hands because I run conferences and I'm a speaker at events sometimes. You hold a cup of coffee in one hand and you hold your phone in the other. And somebody Smart walks man. Up and says, oh, I listened to your podcast. And I say, oh, yeah. And then I just hold my elbow and I say elbow bump or fist bump. And that's kept me from shaking, I would say, 10,000 less hands a year as, you know, somebody who people want to shake hands and take at tech conferences, at least, want to take selfies with me. And the selfie thing is really weird because people get very close and they put their arm around you. And so that's very odd. I don't have a solution for that yet. But definitely, if you were going to rent something with Getaround, I don't think it's a problem renting a car, but you would want to bring Clorox wipes with you or one of those alcohol 70% or more wipes. And you want to wipe the steering wheel and everything else on the dashboard and give it a good cleaning and the handlebars. And I did that already. When I would get on a flight, I would always have those wipes with me and wipe my seats down and everything because I know that that's where a lot of germs collect. And I never saw anybody else do it. And I got a lot of really weird looks when I did it. This last time I got on a flight, of the like, you know, call it 12 seats around me, four people were actively wiping them down when I got on the plane, and I got on late. So there must have been two or three others who did it before that, and one person actually asked me for a wipe, and I gave it to them. So people are, I think, going to change their behavior and just clean things. But I don't think rental cars are going away. I think Uber Pool and Uber Lyft have already been shut down during this.
Right.
But I don't think, you know, being in an Uber or a Lyft or any taxi or cab is dangerous when compared to being on a bus or a subway, right? Those are obviously more dangerous. And if people keep the window open, and if they cough out the window and they, you know, wipe things down, hopefully the driver's wiping it down constantly, I think everybody will be okay.
Right. No, 100%. And especially when you think about personal vehicles, they're so much easier to clean than, say, a subway, right? Because I think New York's MTA system was estimating that they'd be spending about $300 million sanitizing subways, buses, kind of going into our next topic here. So New York's MTA, which you kind of referenced previously, services might get a little worse.
Is that possible?
Yeah. Just wait till you hear that they might be losing $4 billion or sorry, they might be losing $3.7 billion in lost passenger revenue. So they're actually looking for $4 billion from the federal government as a part of the stimulus packages that are being, you know, created in Congress. So kind of referencing that, you know, the 60% drop on subway traffic. MTA's budget is made up of 40% fares, 40% taxes and other state funds. Reminder that MTA was already planning to cut about 2,000 jobs this year. That would have saved them about $1.6 billion. So, I mean, what do you kind of think about the impact of, you know, this pandemic on public transit? You kind of mentioned it previously, but do you think that's also going to see like a ridership drop as well?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, the people who take the subway have no choice but to take it, right? So what is their other option? To take a bicycle? That has natural social distancing in it. So of course, in the short term, walking and biking, if you could possibly do that, sure. But if you're going to Manhattan from Brooklyn or Queens, like, yeah, there are some bridges you can go after, but you may not be able to show up at work sweating, and it might be snowing or raining out, and you might need to take the subway. So people are going to have to take the subway. There's no choice there, and it has to be world-class. I always thought when I become mayor of a city, mayorjason.com, my plan as a capitalist is going to be to give the naming rights to certain subway stations to different brands, the same way we have like Chase Center or Staples Center, right? Imagine if we bid, who would get the rights to Grand Central Station or 34th Street Station? Pick a station. You know, if you're a great brand like Disney, you might want to own those Times Square stations, and then it would be called Disney Station at 42nd Street. And when the driver said, or the conductor said, hey, we're pulling up, he'd say, and here we are, we're at Disney's 42nd Street Station. And when you get out, they would have 100% of the marketing inside that station, and you charge them an arm and a leg for that, and you give them some of the retail space in it as well. They get to brand it all themselves, and then you can make the subway free, or you can make it discounted. So if you get on a Disney station or Target station in Brooklyn, you will get, or Barclays, if you go through that, you get a 50 cent or a $1, right, for using that station, because they are so happy about the branding. I like that idea because there's branding there anyway, and giving the naming rights is something people are comfortable with. And, you know, consumers would love to get a lower price to get on the subway. I think one of the things that would be amazing also when we're talking about the amount of traffic on these and load balancing in it, I believe the subway should be free before 6:30 a.m. and after 6:30 p.m. So if you get on before 6:30, if you get on after 6:30, it's free. If you get on between 6:30 and 7:30, you know, it's, you know, price A. And then if you get on between 7:30 and 9, the peak time, it's plus $1 or something, right, during the week. So you could actually do that dynamic pricing really easily with technology, you know, with Metro cards. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that something like the MTA or the BART system is run by bureaucrats. They're never going to think outside the box like an entrepreneur.
Right.
But I look at it and I see so many opportunities to monetize and to really innovate on those systems.
Absolutely agree with you. Now,
which part do you agree with? Do you like the idea of the naming, or do you find that
offensive? Yeah, no.
No, you like the naming?
No, I think, look, the same way, you know, they found a way to put a logo on an NBA jersey, there might be
Squarespace,
some
pushback. The Knicks. They might, I don't know if they asked for a refund. Initially.
They should. But
they should.
You know, people might be apprehensive at first, but at the end of the day, if it gets people, like you said, free rides, if it gets, you know, the trains running on time, less people in the trains, you know, people are going to sign up for it.
100.
But let me ask
what's next on their docket. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What would you suggest for the airline companies? So they're looking for $50 billion in an aid package. You know, airline passenger revenue worldwide is expected to decrease 20% this year. You know, just
and
for
it's down 70 or 80% at the moment in, you know, year over year. So it's pretty acute, but you know, the thing with these airlines is we can't bail them out again. There needs to be competition. And if they are bailed out, they need to wipe out the equity or we need to be buying equity as the government, right? They cannot be handouts because these handouts are completely unfair for competitors. So if you're a competitor and you kept a great balance sheet, you're JetBlue, you're Southwest, you got a perfect balance sheet, and then you're up against United, right? Or Delta, and they have levered the company up with tons of debt. They're running on, you know, fumes. They've got a month of capital in the bank. It's unfair that the company that was run in a responsible fashion then doesn't get the bailout and the other team gets a bailout. It'd be like some team in basketball, since we were using that analogy before, didn't practice, was out of shape, and stayed out all night partying. And then they got on the court and they were playing terrible. And they said, you know what? You guys, you're a mess. Here's 20 extra points versus this team that got to bed on time and trained and is all in peak physical shape. These companies need to go out of business or to go into receivership. The equity stack, in other words, the people who own the equities companies need to suffer for making that bet and owning equity in a company that was run so poorly. And you can't do that and then penalize the workers. And so there's a very simple solution. No handouts. You got a loan or we bought equity. And, you know, there was a lot of hand-wringing back in the day when Fisker, Solyndra, and Tesla all got energy loans, right? And so we created these loans. They were loans. You have to pay them back for those companies to incentivize people to get us off fossil fuel. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously related and perfect topic for us to talk about here on Inside Transportation. They, two of those three companies did not pay anything back, and one of them paid everything back with the interest and paid it back early, Tesla. That actually is a good outcome for society and for taxpayers. If they get some amount of the money back and it moved the ball forward, great. But if the incompetent Fisker people, who were just unbelievably incompetent, made a horrible car and stole from Elon, allegedly they stole the designs and stuff like that. I mean, I know he lost the lawsuit, but it was really nasty the way Fisker like worked for him and then created a competing company like at the same time.
What's that? Still trying to this day to launch.
I know. I mean, who would ever give Fisker money? Like, it's like literally this guy is like,
you know, there's going to be an electric car on the Fisker brand by the end of the year. And I'm like,
I mean, I would, if you told me like, here's a free Fisker car, I would not want to get in it. I mean, who would want to even be a passenger in that car? It sounds dangerous. This guy's run every company into the ground, right? So, You want to give the government chance at upside. So, hey, listen, yeah, Delta, you want a bailout? Great. How much would you like? You want $1 billion or five? Great. Okay. We now have we have $1 billion in equity in your company. And they're like, well, wait a second. I'm the CEO. I own 1%. And that $1 billion, and we're worth $10 billion. So now my equity is worth 10% less. It's like, yeah, you said you wanted the money. Do you not want the money? We don't have to give you the money. Oh, do you want a loan? Great. We'll give you the loan at 0% interest for 3 years. And then after that, it goes up to the LIBOR plus one, whatever it is. You know, you have to do it fairly. And I think that's one of the great things. If you see in the bailout debate, and today was like a big debate day where like Democrats are trying to put in like, you know, their favorite pet project, like $30,000 in student loan debt being eliminated. It's like, what does that have to do with the coronavirus? You know, and, you know, people losing their jobs or companies going under. It doesn't have anything to do with it. I mean, I could understand like, you don't have to pay your student loans this year. Sure. Something like that. But to wipe out $30,000 for every person with student loans, they're trying to put that in there. And then the Republicans are trying to say no constraint on how they use the money. They get the money for free. And it's like, wait a second. You could just, it's a gift? No. And there should be no buybacks of the stock, and there should be no, the CEOs and the management teams should not get to give themselves any bonuses unless they're on time paying back the loans. They don't have to pay back the whole thing because you want to still incentivize great people to go to these companies, but they have to be on time or within 10% or 20% or so of paying back their loan. And the other pieces are saying no layoffs, which is a really challenging one. There needs to be some, there needs to be some nuance there, because if the company really does need to be smaller because they lost a couple of routes that were unprofitable, what are they going to do? Just have people sitting there doing no work? So they have to think about that. Maybe they can only lay off 10% a year for the next 3 years. They have to space out the layoffs to not hit the economy. So, you know, that's what's happening right now. It's just a negotiation, but under no circumstances should it be a gift.
Right. One thing I will add to your point, right? American Airlines, they currently have about $34 billion in debt and liabilities. and their stock price has been halved since the, you know, the 2020 high. And, you know, I think in 2011, they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, right? So kind of supports your point that some of these airlines might not be run very efficiently. They might have a lot of debt and they're kind of being bailed out. Yeah. It's very interesting. While, you know, public transit has received $0 in bailout money. So that's kind of interesting. Or proposed bailout money. They're trying to get something
there. Uber and Uber and Lyft going to get bailouts? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Like, I think the CEO had published a letter.
What's the difference between Uber and Lyft? What's that?
I think Dara Khosrowshahi sent a letter to Congress to include Uber drivers and Lyft drivers in that stimulus package.
Yeah, I think so that's fine. I'm talking about Uber itself getting free money. Everybody now is like free money for everybody. And I think there has to be some process by looking at this. And what they could do is they could say, listen, you can take the money now, but under these circumstances, it has to be paid back. And if you take it and you decide you don't need it, you can give it back.
Right.
And you can give it back in the next 18 months, tax-free, interest-free. So let's say a bunch of Uber drivers wanted to get, or Lyft drivers or DoorDash drivers, whatever, or even some other company, American Airlines, they want to get some of this money. They could ask for it and then they could draw it down as they need it. So they could take $500 million or, $100 million at a time. And whenever they take it, the clock starts ticking and they can return it at any time for 18 months without any interest. So the government gets what it wants. We keep these companies alive. We don't have a big economic upheaval as we're getting through this virus. And then the companies can get what they want. If they get a better source of capital and they want to get that debt off their books, they can. And if not, they can just pay it back slowly over time. You know, the government printed the money. They can, doesn't matter if you pay it back in 5 years or 25 years, like the government can withstand this level of loans, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? Hey, give us a little bit more elbow room on the plane if we're giving you these loans.
Another topic. I don't know how they get away with that. I mean, it's just crazy.
The free checked bag, maybe. Another sector of the transportation industry that's kind of seen some shifts from the coronavirus are scooter sharing companies. You have a bunch of people sharing electric scooters, electric bikes, and as a result, they've paused service in many markets. So Lime has paused operations in about 23 countries, including, the US, UK, Spain, Brazil, France. They're still going to be operating in Australia and South Korea. Bird is rolling back service in all its European markets and some markets in the US, including the Bay Area. Lyft, who also operates some scooters in San Francisco, they're still offering them there, but they've paused operations in Miami. Uber also operates a micromobility sector, so they paused operations in Sacramento. Ford owns Spin, which is actually one of the sponsors of this podcast. They said they would remove scooters at the request of government officials. Now, I read an article this week from Mashable where they interviewed a physician, and the physician said it was okay to ride on a shared scooter if it was properly sanitized. My question to you, Jason, is do you think this is going to stop people from riding on shared scooters because they're going to be afraid of catching something while they're riding?
Yeah, no. I mean, you should have wipes with you. Everybody should have wipes with them and hand sanitizer with them at all times. You wipe down the handlebars, or if you're wearing gloves in a cold climate, I think that's probably a logical idea these days. I've been looking into gloves. I don't know if I can get away with wearing gloves in California. I don't know if anybody's ever done that before. But it's... I am surprised that they're shutting down. I would think that these things would be more popular, but I guess people are staying at home, right?
Right.
So if they're staying at home, it makes sense for them to pause their services. But this seems to me like one of those services that would do better post-coronavirus, post people wanting to be on a crowded subway or bus because there's social distancing. But these businesses have always been very challenging because they were operating under the idea that they would take the, call it under a mile and a half, so under 30 blocks in a city for some number of Uber X or Lyft rides, right? And that would be their sweet spot, a quick cab ride or, a two subway stop ride. Well, if And that means they had to be $2 or $3 for that ride, as opposed to $5 or $6 or $7 for the Uber or the Lyft. And they're kind of a similar price or maybe even more expensive than taking the subway or the bus.
Right.
So that's a challenge, I think, is that those businesses are so low margin. And the inside line has always been, I don't have inside information at this time about Uber, but in the early days, I think the way the company looked at it, I can't remember who, but people sort of pontificating that there would be an Uber or Lyft subscription like Amazon Prime, so Uber Prime, and that Uber Prime would include bicycles and scooters, or let's say if you had a $20 a month membership, it would include 5 hours a month of those services, right? Or even maybe unlimited, so they get this like base of users.
Right.
So I think the only company that comes out of that is Bird. That's the one that's best capitalized and has the best product. They make their own hardware. Mm-hmm. And I think for that category, the hardware is one of the main issues from what I understand, is that they just, the standard hardware that you'd buy as a user of your own scooter, you would be very careful with that scooter. You wouldn't be popping it off the curb because if it breaks, you have to pay for it. Right. Whereas people beat the heck out of those things. You know, they're doing tricks in them.
Yeah.
And so you really have to build a purpose-built bicycle and or scooter that can withstand being trashed, being dropped from two stories, being, you know, people jumping off ramps or running them into garbage cans.
Yeah, and both companies have actually made substantial improvements over the last year and a half to that scooter that they actually put out on the streets, because the previous ones that were being made by, I believe, Segway Ninebot were disposable. I think they would churn through a scooter in about 20 days, or like 20 to 30 days, and then they had to retire the scooter. And that's why they were burning through so much cash. Imagine buying all these scooters every 20, 30 days.
Crazy. Well, I mean, they weren't that expensive. And I think they did make enough money on it. So there was, you know, usually when you see this weird behavior from the outside, I can tell you from the inside as investors, what we might see is, oh, that scooter lasted 60 days. And it generated, over those 60 days, $50 in revenue a day. So it made $3,000 and the scooter cost us $1,200. So there was $1,800 in profit. Okay, it makes no sense for us, you know, from the outside, for you to be like, oh my God, the scooters only last 90 days. It's like, yeah, but they were profitable, you know? And we used them for parts or something, and we're going to make a better one. So you could actually see a path to profitability or a path to this work. And the other thing they had was, my understanding is, they would have to go for send divers down on Santa Monica Pier and the Manhattan Beach Pier because so many of them were getting thrown over the pier in protest.
Yeah, no, I think there's actually like an Instagram account just dedicated to showing the destruction of Bird and Lime scooters. It's quite a follow. Should look it up.
If you think about what we talked about earlier in the utilization of cars, if cars were utilized like those scooters were utilized, you know, that would be a good thing for society if a car got used more, right? How many cars do people own for 10 years and they put 50,000 miles on them, 100,000 miles on them, but the car could actually go 500,000 miles, right?
Right.
It's completely underutilized, and that's not good for society. So I think that's one of the things that self-driving cars or robo-taxis, when they come out, you know, those robo-taxis, they might be on the road 23 hours a day. You know, 20 hours a day. And the only time they're not on the road is because they're charging. And if they're swapping battery packs as opposed to charging or supercharging, it could be even less time. So all the VTOLs, the vertical takeoff and landing, basically drones for humans, those, because those have such large battery packs, all the designs of those are going to be, they land, the batteries, giant battery packs, are removed and then replaced. And the removed ones go charge for an hour or two, and you just swap them off at the takeoff and landing zones, which is really fascinating.
Those are going to be so much fun to see develop over the next few years. I think Uber is actually one of the companies kind of at the forefront of that.
Yeah, there's going to be about 20 companies that get there. Kitty Hawk is one of them here. And there's a Chinese one that's doing vertical takeoff and landing for consumers, and it is pretty amazing.
Yeah. So a few more topics here. So this one's, you know, you might have some inside information here, but Uber said that it would still have about $4 billion in cash.
Just so you know, when we say inside information, I have none. I don't know the current management team, only the other one, because it's a publicly traded company. So do not trade thinking, do not use the term inside information. It's a private company. You can say inside information, which is interesting. Like, you can have inside information, but you can't have that as a public company.
Right. So if Uber, so per Uber's model, if the company's business declined by 80% year over year this year, there would still be about $4 billion cash on hand. So this statement was made by the current CEO of the company, Dara Khosrowshahi. I hope I said that right. Because 2/3 of Uber's costs, like insurance and driver sign-up subsidies, don't exist when trips don't occur. Right now, they have about $10 billion in unrestricted cash on hand, about another $1.5 billion for mergers and acquisitions. What do you think about, the business model here?
Well, this is something I could talk about. The private early, 10 years ago, the days of Uber, one of the things that made it attractive as an investment and as a business is that it was an asset-light marketplace. So it was always meant to be a marketplace. You connect drivers with passengers, and you don't own the rights to the drivers. The drivers can come on and off the platform anytime they want. If they don't agree with the pay, they can go somewhere else. They can work for three companies at once. So you don't own the drivers. So you lose a lot when you don't own the drivers. Uber can't tell the drivers to wear an Uber logo or to behave a certain way or to play a certain music. That's why you're like, why doesn't Uber force the drivers to do things? They can't. They're contractors. They're not employees. Employees, you can direct the work. With contractors, you're not allowed to direct how they do the work. You can give them the job, but you can't direct the work. And this is all obscure employment law that you've probably heard about a whole bunch. So it is related. And if the system has has a million rides this month or 2 million, the variable cost is not much different for Uber. It might be very different for the driver, but actually not, right? The driver already owns the Prius that's, got 50,000 miles on it. So if they do one or two drives, it's a little bit more gas, right? There's just some variable cost there, but not a lot. It's not like you have to get a new car every time. So that's one of the nice things about Airbnb's business model or eBay's or anybody who doesn't inventory or have a heavy asset. If Airbnb owned all of their locations, they would have them available 365 days a year. And that would be amazing for them. But then they would have the liability of owning them when the market 100%. Crashes. That's called a hotel company. Like, hotels right now are bumming because they have to weather the storm. But when there's a big conference in town, hotels are excited because they can rack, put the prices way up and capture all that economics. So they're just two different business models, asset light versus asset heavy.
Yes. And I hope they, make it through the year because rides are down.
Uber will be fine. They have over $10 billion in cash and they could cut costs massively if they needed to. And you've seen they've left every market where they're not in first or second. So, and when they leave, they do this great thing. They get equity in the company they left. So they own 17% or 20% of Didi, the Uber of China, which they were in second place to. So that company becomes worth eventually $1 trillion or $500 billion, even $100 billion. They get 17 to 20% of that, I believe. Somebody can look up the exact number. It was 17 back in the day when they did the deal, if I remember correctly.
I think they also acquired a stake in Careem, which is a Middle Eastern ride-hailing company. They're all over the place. And
Well, if you get the gold, the plan was always if we got the gold or we got the silver medal, great. But we're not going to stick around for bronze or to, come in fourth or fifth place in a market. It's not worth it, right? And there's so much opportunity for them in the other markets. And when you're number one or number two, it's obviously going to be profitable or highly profitable. And when you're number three or four, it's probably not going to be profitable or it's going to be modestly or minorly profitable.
Right. And so we're kind of wrapping up with this. So every week on our newsletters, Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles, we run a poll. And we have some of the smartest people that read our newsletter. So these insights are great. So we ran a poll asking, are you going to reconsider your electric vehicle purchase because of COVID-19? 53% answered that they were reconsidering their purchase. They had one, planned out for 2020. And, they're like reconsidering it now because of what's going on with the pandemic. 46.2% of readers said they're following through with their plans to buy an EV. So it kind of shows you that this pandemic is kind of making people reconsider their plans for 2020 as far as, you know, jumping into
major
an electrified
purchases.
Vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this falls into major purchases. It would make sense to me that any major purchase would be reconsidered in a pandemic and with the stock market correcting, I don't know what the peak was, but over 30%. Where are you going to go to college? What car are you going to buy? And what house? I think it's house, college, car now. It used to be house, car, college. But those are like, I think, and then getting married. Those are the, and having a baby. Those are your big five decisions in life in terms of economics and economic impact, generally speaking. And so, yeah, any of them are on the table. I guess another way to ask this poll would be of the 53% or 54% that said they were reconsidering their plans, would they plan, of those, how many of them planned on swapping in an ICE engine for that EV? Because that might save them some money on the margins. Do you think that's part of it?
So we didn't specifically ask that question, but I'm actually very curious about that now that you mention it, because
might be a good follow-up.
I had heard that as a part of the stimulus package, another thing that was kind of proposed was a revival of the Cash for Clunkers program that came out after the 2008 recession, where people could trade in an ICE car for a electric vehicle, which would make a lot of sense. And you can get a lot of people in electric vehicles that way.
Totally. And then you sell those cars to other markets that covet them, right? Like South America or Africa, China, whatever.
Right.
I'm 100%. Not sure where those cars went. Where did those cars go? South America, typically, used cars from America?
A lot of the parts. So yeah, a lot of the parts. So like South America, Mexico, for sure.
Well, because it's close, because you have a shipping cost. So it makes sense that it goes south of the United States and you have a large population down there.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So yes, thanks to all the
inside. And by the way,
go ahead.
Just so you know, you might, if you're using SurveyMonkey or Typeform, two of the best survey tools, you can do conditional polls where after they answer a question, you can ask them a follow-up question. So the people who say yes or no can get asked a different second question, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that might be an interesting idea. But I think these polls for this podcast will be amazing. And really great job with the lineup of the first episode. We got through this in, looks like 45 minutes, which is absolutely fantastic. And special thanks to Ford and Fenwick and West for supporting this podcast and giving us the ability to do it. And Johan and I are going to do what we just did today and maybe bring some guests on once in a while and run through the news. And hopefully you guys find this super informative. And if you have feedback, you can email Johan, Johan at inside.com. Is that yours?
Yes, that's my email.
And Jason at inside.com. Any closing thoughts here for the pod? How did we do, you think, Johan?
Hey, I think we did a pretty good job. This was my first podcast ever. So
you have a podcasting radio voice. I think that you should read some bedtime stories for com.com. Nick, how did we do? You have your microphone there, Nick, producer Nick can jump in and tell us. We did good? Okay, leave that in the pod. I'm on a scale of 1 to Joe Rogan. How did we do? 6? Okay, good. We got work to do. There's always room for improvement. All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Nick, tell them, Johan, tell them where they can get the newsletters.
Inside.com/transportation for the transportation newsletter. If you're more into electric vehicles, that's inside.com/EVs.
Amazing. All right. We'll see you all next time on episode 1. This is episode 0, so don't judge us too much by it.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.